Okay, so that was some music from Parade from 1917, and you'll hear more about why you were just hearing that little excerpt there. And you are listening to K-Chung Radio 1630 on the AM dial and kchungradio.org on the internets. Today on Performance Now, you are very privileged to have a very special guest, Adam Linder. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about some of Adam's recent projects. And maybe just to fill you listeners who may not be familiar with Adam just yet, Adam Linder is a choreographer and a dancer and a performer, normally based in Berlin, but LA has been very fortunate to have had him in our midst for the past year or so. Is that about right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And you're here for a little bit longer.
Yeah, one thing kind of led to another, and we decided to stay a little bit longer. It just seems like... friendships and other, you know, relationships forging, and that felt too quick to let them kind of drift away. So, and also, like, yeah, getting to know this interesting town.
Yeah, and so, you know, the idea for having you on the show came over the course of the summer when you performed somewhat out of sequence, the three parts. Can we say that's like a three-part trilogy? Or
yeah, well, they're definitely works that are part of a series.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just like numbered in the order that I make them, and they're three and counting.
Yeah, and so the title of the series is Choreographic Service.
Yeah,
and the first one is Some Cleaning. And that you actually performed at 356 Mission this summer.
Yes.
But that was not the first time you've performed it.
No, that work was made in, so that was the first service, as you said, and that work was made in 2013.
Okay. And when did you decide that, you know, you were going to do all three of them here? Like, this was going to be an opportunity for you to, you know, this past summer was going to be a chance for you to test them out.
Yeah, it was completely by chance. I guess the first invitation was from Mocha, Step and Repeat.
Yeah.
And they had... like Emma Reeves and Lanka Tattersall from Mocha had seen the work in London last year, and so they invited hired the service, and then 356 also were thinking of doing something with me, and they really liked the idea of Some Cleaning, and then simultaneously while I was somehow like had these performances in the midst, I was making the third choreographic service, Some Writing, for a show that I did at the end of summer in London.
Yeah.
So Public Fiction asked me if I would do a kind of like almost like a trial run.
Yeah.
So it just kind of fitted in, but it was actually the first time the three services to date have been shown in the same city.
Oh, and how did that feel for you as to be?
It was great, actually. It was, suddenly I realized I had a lot of gigs in LA over the summer, and I was like, oh, because I hadn't shown my work here since 2 years ago when I showed something at Peter, at Jimmy Kidd's space.
Yeah.
And so suddenly I was, you know, these works were planned, and I felt like, oh great, like, you know, people are gonna really obtain context for the work and really be able to like to kind of keep company with it, because I noticed that several people were seeing the different services at these different venues over the summer.
Yeah, and so can we maybe talk a little about the idea of choreographic service? Because it's not your typical kind of, you know, commissioned dance where mm-hmm. an organization says, oh, Adam, we'd love to work mm-hmm. with you and can you produce something? Mm-hmm. It's really kind of you are for hire in some ways, mm-hmm. right, for this. And it's very upfront in some ways that you are performing a service mm-hmm. rather than performing mm-hmm. a dance per se, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? So can you say a little more about where the idea for that came from?
Absolutely. So the first service, Some Cleaning, as we said, was made in 2013. So mm-hmm. I was kind of working through some of these initial ideas at the beginning of that year. And I've been making work for the theater, what I call stage works, for several years, coming from a performance background, working for other choreographers. Mm-hmm. And I really was thinking, well, the stage is one place and one context and one history to make work from and in regard to. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, well, we're hearing all of this discourse and rhetoric about expanded notions of choreography and how choreography is being utilized across multiple disciplines and out of the theater and out of that mm-hmm. framework as a very progressive kind of rubric for contemporary thinking. And
yeah.
And I wanted to develop for myself a way to put forward an interest in choreography and a way that I could activate it publicly mm-hmm. that wasn't bound to the theater parameters.
Yeah.
So in this way of, you know, the theater in the way that it deals with time, a seated audience, a kind of collective viewing experience in the dark, mm-hmm. you know, where kind of light, sound, dramaturgy are at your disposal. And there's a very different kind of history, a different palette and different parameters that you're working with, and I really wanted to do something that was like distilled.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about how the notion of performance mm-hmm. was being definitely having this kind of resurgent moment in yeah. visual arts and in culture at large, and thinking, okay, how do we put forward an agenda of choreography,
mm-hmm.
underpin it with a value, underpin it with an economic structure,
yeah.
but something that makes sense for it, and something that could also, and it makes sense in its temporal nature.
Mm-hmm.
So the services for me is really, the reason why I use the service model is because it's really this finite demarcation of kind of like finite temporal category
mm-hmm.
that can be, you know, can be hired for an hour or a day,
yeah,
and it remains in the domain of what, you know, what choreography kind of is essentially, which mm-hmm. is a value and a corporeal skill that stays within and is activated primarily by the people that do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was interested in was somehow that the service has a product form
mm-hmm.
and puts forward an economy and doesn't shy away from these ideas of dissemination and livelihood and
mm-hmm.
but that it doesn't become an object. It doesn't become a kind of held product
yeah.
that can be, you know, can be somehow like supposedly transferred or eventually sold. It doesn't do those things. The
yeah.
service,
it's like kind of very punctual and also ephemeral. Like it's
totally
uh-huh.
it's like, this is what I can offer,
mm-hmm.
this is the time that you're going to agree to facilitate this, you being, you know, the client, whether that's institutional or private, and I am going to fulfill this action, this premise,
yeah,
but the real ownership mm-hmm. of the work, yeah. the content, the performed action mm-hmm. cannot be extracted from the body of the performers.
Yeah.
So that's why I use the service model.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like, I always say, it's a bit like when you go to the physiotherapist. You go,
yeah.
you have the session, mm-hmm. you reap the benefits,
yeah.
but A, you don't become a physiotherapist, mm-hmm. and B, you don't get to take the physiotherapist home,
yeah.
but you still reap the benefits of the experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's like an actually very, you know, that is a kind of different way of thinking about dance, right, as a kind of a thing that, as an experience, because, I mean, part of what I've always liked about dance is precisely that there is no commodity,
right,
normally, that, you know, the experience of watching it and kind of experience and being in it in some ways is it, and then once it's over, it's over. And there's I mean, for me, coming from an art background anyway, or a context, it's like very different way of thinking about, you know, what the practice involves, mm. what you know, what traces there are of it. Mm. And I mean, what was intriguing about choreographic service some cleaning is, like, you know, the first one anyway, is that, you know, there is very much kind of putting front and center the idea that choreography is kind of time bound, or the mm-hmm. service is a time bound thing. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, it's you agree on a specific duration, right?
Yeah.
For each service.
Right, exactly. Each hire is. Mm-hmm. So I like to say that it's not durational, but it's conditional.
Yeah.
Because a hire, in theory, could be 1 hour, or or it could be 3 months.
Yeah. And at the same time, it operates on a different model than a standard, I guess, you know, the way that a theater can commission a piece from you,
mm.
and then it becomes part of the repertoire, right? I mean, is right. that a difference?
Absolutely, in the sense that, well, I think the way that me making a new service or me making a new stage work comes about
mm-hmm.
is not dissimilar in that maybe it might come from a prompt from
yeah.
either a, you know, a theater or a visual art institution.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in a way, actually, they're quite similar
mm-hmm.
that... the work is made,
yeah.
and then it is, you know, even with a theatre work, it's on the market, and it's available for booking, and it can travel around, and there's
yeah.
in theory there's endless amount of times it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a live edition,
yeah.
let's say, in if we use, like, you know, art terms. And but the difference with the service is that it has no preparation time. It's kind mm-hmm. of 0 hour contract. It's
yeah.
they're all very singular activities,
mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require any staging.
Yeah.
And it's this singular action that can continue for mm-hmm. as long as it's been hired.
Yeah.
So that would be the difference. But I think really in the kind of stages of commissioning
mm-hmm.
or the stages of like creating the work, developing mm-hmm. the work, and then how it's disseminated, it's quite similar. And that's something that's been really fulfilling about how my thinking has developed in the last 3 years doing the services is actually
mm-hmm.
The exchange of effective experience that the services offer is what the theater has always been doing.
Mm-hmm.
The theater has always been
mm-hmm.
A kind of had the economy of a gun for hire,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I'm not using the not using the architecture of the theater, not using the historical framing or the way that we're socially conditioned to look at it,
mm-hmm.
but still leveraging from that and
yeah.
calling myself a choreographer, but working outside, but still using that transaction model.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And there's also something very much like you're foregrounding the, like, labor, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, when you do some cleaning, you're dressed in, like, you know, a t-shirt mm-hmm. and blue overalls. Mm-hmm. You look very much like someone who could be cleaning,
mm-hmm.
like janitorial or something. Mm-hmm. And the actions that you perform are kind of the gestures of someone who
mm-hmm.
might be dusting or mopping or
drilling,
or yeah. you know, otherwise like, yeah, doing something that's about maintenance mm-hmm. in some ways, right?
And it's functional. Mm-hmm. I mean, it with some cleaning, it's one performer.
Yeah.
And
you.
It's yeah. me. Uh-huh. Although in time, due to like availabilities,
yeah,
I may have to bring someone else on for that.
Uh-huh.
But for the last 3 years, I've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it starts from a very functional premise, as does the contractual exchange for all the services. There's like,
yeah.
it's like the rules of engagement are laid out, mm-hmm. but then how the choreographic action
mm-hmm.
of each service unfolds has all the kind of slipperiness and fiction mm-hmm. and I don't know, like that untenable texture or chemistry of live performance. And so with some cleaning, I really start from this kind of functional premise where, I do have the overalls on and the actions are derivative mm-hmm. of very functional actions that would clean or address the space. But I'm using a mimetic fiction to do
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes very fantastical and almost absurd. So, you know, for me, it's some cleaning is really about this hinge mm-hmm. between the rational
mm-hmm.
and the rational and the analytical and the kind of expressive or fictional.
Mm-hmm.
What is necessary and mm-hmm. then what is ornamental. So
yeah.
it's always hinging on these two things.
Yeah, and I mean, at least when I saw you perform it at 356 Mission, I mean, in some ways, what you were also doing is limiting the space itself, like you were going around the borders
right.
and then kind of, you know, it wasn't just kind of totally random in that, you know, you were just performing the action and part of it, you were kind of drawing the viewer's attention not only to yourself doing these actions
right.
but also to the perimeters of the space
right kind and that kind of like methodological mm-hmm. way of moving through. Like I'm very strict
yeah.
I'm very strict when I do some cleaning
yeah And even though you're not actually cleaning, like, you really work up a sweat. I mean, at the end some cleaning, you were like,
yeah.
you know.
Which is, you know, the thing is that it's choreographic, but it's, mm-hmm. it's to go back to what you were saying, it's a particular type of labor. It's a labor. It's mm-hmm. an investment.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that the services really foreground is like, what are the conditions for this investment?
Mm-hmm.
And are we willing to invest in something that we cannot possess mm-hmm. in futurity?
Yeah.
But that we can invest in the present experience of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then, so that from that piece in 2013, then to this year, we have Some Proximity.
Mm-hmm. That was actually made last year.
Oh, made last
yeah.
year. Okay.
Yeah.
So that piece, it's not just yourself.
No. It's an art writer called Jonathan P. Watts and another performer called Justin F. Kennedy.
So the three of you work together on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it's not kind of, you know, miming a specific activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes much more dance-like in that, you know, you're like moonwalking and you're doing these mm-hmm. kind of very mm-hmm. kind of like street dance kind of
this glide
yeah
this glide movement
yeah. yeah and you know you're both very kind of I don't know quite what the word is but very smooth in your moves
mm-hmm.
like and you know and at least you know when it was performed at Mocha
mm-hmm.
you know as part of Step and Repeat you know you had these statements lining the wall
mm-hmm.
of the gallery space,
mm-hmm.
And you would take turns handing each other these statements, picking a statement and then handing it, and then the other person would read it while the other person would be moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did you, you know, hit upon that as the
nature of that
yeah.
work?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of coincided with a chapter of my work or my thinking
mm-hmm.
in which I've made a few works
mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years that are really dealing with how language operates in cultural production in
mm-hmm.
different ways and thinking about the different forms or modalities of language and just ultimately how strong a currency it is
mm-hmm.
and wanting to not have that currency operate around the work as a mediation device, but actually to insert it in the work.
Yeah.
So what we do in some proximity is there's three of us, two performers and an art writer, and Jonathan, the art writer, is moving through, we're all working in real time, and Jonathan is moving through the environment or the building or wherever we are, the museum, and he's working as he would as a writer, reflecting, making notes, having like jotting down kind of these critical reflections and just forming his thoughts. And he does this on pieces of A4 paper.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, they're pinned on the wall of the space where Justin and I are essentially translating them into vocal material. So we have different ways of vocalizing or rhythmizing the text.
Yeah.
And then using that cadence and that rhythm to then glide on. And so basically what some proximity is really servicing is this kind of collapse between the kind of distanced or static body of the kind of critical thinker or the writer and that of the kind of active galvanized visceral body of the performer. So yeah, it's this kind of folding in of these otherwise quite what we understand to be quite contrary approaches,
like insisting that there's a kind of, you know, you're really in it kind of,
yeah, or insisting that the body as an expressive tool is articulate and critical in and of itself.
Yeah.
It comes from, you know, I mean, this is very broad, but if we think like post-enlightenment and this like mind-body divide and then how that moved into, you know, how like the notion of criticism evolved in the 20th century, which was this like, you know, one part of art criticism became this like highly rigorous, highly citational, academic kind of form where a kind of where personal response and personal investment and liberty was out of the question. So here we put the personal, we put this kind of expressive subjective back into that critical thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, experiencing this piece was certainly very different than the other piece in that, you know, there's how do I put it? I mean, there's definitely, you know, more kind of I would say emotional appeal like in the piece, in that both of you are there, and just simply because of your interaction with each other, that already kind of gives it a certain kind of openness that, you know, like some cleaning, like in some ways, you know, feels very sealed off. Like you're there, you're not kind of really responding to anyone, and it's a little, you know, kind of unclear exactly what the relationship. Whereas here, you know, there's, you're kind of, you know, as you're moving in the space, you're also moving around people, and you're kind of very adroitly kind of avoiding them when necessary, or, you know, like kind of waltzing around them in some
ways.
So
there's like, I mean, just the kind of premise of it is a triangulation between Jonathan, Justin, and I, and particularly in the way that Justin and I have to play the game of transforming these texts, there's sociality already involved. I mean, there's a lot of eye contact, because we have to read cues off each other. No, absolutely. I think that some proximity has a lightness in that it's really openly looking at its environment and processing its environment. Not only in written form, but in verbal and kind of physical kind of proprioceptive form.
Yeah. And you know, so I was looking for I took photos of some of the texts, and if you don't mind, I'm just going to read one of them. So there's, you know, there were various things that were kind of almost, I guess, Jonathan, as he was walking around, you know, he was kind of, there were certain issues that seemed to be on his mind, many of them economic, dealing with, you know, economic equality or just kind of labor. And so one of them that I noticed was about tipping, but it was kind of a funny, it's not kind of like this very, you know, it's not a discursive thing. It's kind of in some ways very poetic. You know, so he wrote the Ballad of Tipping. Tipping in America is expected. You should tip, and these are, there's line breaks for, I guess, you know, when you're supposed to like be moving to the new line. You should tip because wages are low. If you knew we negotiate our fee, we don't do this for free, would you still tip us though? Dancers tipped in a titty year.
Titty bar, I think it
titty
was.
Titty bar, oh, dancers tipped in a titty bar, sorry. Dancers tipped in mocha. Dancers tipped on the Walk of Fame. The croupier tipped in poker.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jonathan was feeling his rhyme.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And I love that, you know, there are these kind of very informally written, you know, they definitely look like they were kind of written on the fly and kind of.
Yeah. He's got like, I mean, he's got like a satchel and he's got like a pad of paper and he's like, yeah, he's doing his thing.
Yeah, and what's great is that, you know, during the performance of this, he would come in and out, right? Like, as people were just kind of sitting there, and as the rest of Step and Repeat was going on over, you know, all of Mocha, you know, there are, you know, the two of you, and then every once in a while, he would just, like, he would be, I think he had a backpack, right, sometimes?
Yeah, I guess, like, when he has written up a text or he's accumulated a couple, he just comes and pins them on the wall intermittently.
Yeah.
And he has one modality that he can call, which means that both Justin and I are gliding at the same time. So it's this kind of wild card that he has, where he has agency to kind of change up the gameplay.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we mentioned, but what we do, Justin and I, is that one person is active and one person is passive, and we're playing this game where the passive calls the kind of game, the game mode for which Justin will vocalize or move.
Oh.
So there are these different there are these different modes which are called out, which kind of categorize, like, let's say, different degrees of proximity to the text. So there's like some distance, which means that you have to glide into the space but read the text static.
Yeah.
Or some proximity, which means you have to glide in, choose a text, and then the passive person just reads it in a kind of regular reading voice.
Yeah.
But then some other proximity means that the passive person is rhythmicizing the text.
Oh.
So there are these different modes. So we're like, if you're the passive person, you're always calling the gameplay for the other person.
Yeah. Huh. So, okay, it's funny that you bring in rhythmicizing, because I was wondering also, you know, about the kind of aesthetic of some proximity, because it, you know, it's very, feels very different than some cleaning. I mean, partly because you're adopting a different uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you've got this kind of, I don't even know where the inspiration. Can you say a little about the inspiration of that uniform? Because it's black with like that little red sash or belt, right? And then the kind of this, you know, the like totally white sneakers and the white socks. Like, where did that, like, the idea for that come from? And then some proximity on like the embroidery.
Some proximity. Yeah,
on the back.
I mean, all the three services have very particular costumes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm really interested in my work in costuming and having the work very specifically visually placed.
Yeah.
I think costumes are a huge blind sight in performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's this idea that. I mean, this is a bigger discussion, but there's this kind of plain clothes thing that's perpetuated in performance because, you know, they're trying to like highlight the more like put value on what the body is doing rather than how it looks.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't escape representation, mm-hmm. and it's a visual art form.
Yeah.
So let's, like, make it look cute, you know?
Okay, well, no, the costumes are definitely very, very cute. They're like uniforms, right?
Yeah. Of a sort. They're all, like, they're all uniforms, mm-hmm. For the services.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just love the idea of, like, of taking, kind of agency within representation, mm-hmm. to another degree, not just in the content and what we do and why we do,
yeah,
but in kind of like who we are there and mm-hmm. who we stand for. And I think that's why I love costuming so much. And I don't know, there's like with some proximity there are these kind of like short boiler suits, mm-hmm. that they're a little bit like Queer Mechanic or something.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I don't know.
I can see that. Yeah,
uh-huh. Like, you know, because they've got this kind of like tight, boyish, mm-hmm. Thing, and they have the embroidery on the back, which makes me think of like a kind of mechanic's uniform.
Yeah,
but then like a lovely little like woven belt.
Yeah. See, I was like kind of trying to figure out where that came from, and you know, like the aesthetic of it like makes me. I mean, it's interesting you say that there's like a kind of the short boiler suit kind of look, but I was like at first I was like, oh, is this like maybe like, you know, like, I don't know, like valet service or something, you know, because like you also have those like sneakers on, yeah. right, where you could be running. But then like, you know, the kind of movement that you do is so kind of you know, it's like in some ways it's so smooth, you know, yeah. it's like the gliding like all yeah. around, you know. So that's interesting. And it's also interesting that you talk about, you know, like wanting to give a specific uniform or mm-hmm. costume to it and making that very explicit, because like in some ways, you know, part of at least, you know, thinking about, you know, like the choreographic service overall, you know, it seems like somehow relatable to like Judson, mm-hmm. and the idea of the everyday and mm-hmm. kind of everyday movements, you mm-hmm. know, because some cleaning is definitely about everyday movements,
right?
But it's like theatricalized in a or explicitly theatricalized in a way that maybe Judson, you know, would denies.
Never. I mean, yeah, it's like mm-hmm. it's like, you know, ornamental some cleaning in a way that Judson would deny. I mean, that yeah. kind of like mm-hmm. the upfront fagginess
yeah.
Of like kind of these Baroque hand gestures of cleaning.
Yeah.
It's not, I can't really imagine that
yeah.
that Judson would have advocated for
yeah
such
and, there's a way that it looks kind of like every day, but then you're like, that's not, I like, I've never cleaned like that before, you know. Like, where did that yeah huh.
But that's where the choreographic is, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
So so the choreographic really lies in all of that agency and that juice and that embellishment,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, I think as some cleaning really kind of moves from
yeah.
the functional outwards,
mm-hmm.
I think this legacy of the functional, the pedestrian, or the
mm-hmm.
the kind of sourcing of everyday materials is very Judson-esque.
Yeah.
But where it goes to,
yeah, is somewhere else. Yeah, and I think that that's something that's underscored also by, I mean, I don't even know if calling it the soundtrack is correct, but you know, in some proximity there is also the audio element, mm-hmm. right, which is very subtle, like totally mm-hmm. kind of, you know, like there are moments where I wasn't even sure mm-hmm. like where it was coming from, and then but it is there and kind of marks the kind of transitions and the time of the piece.
Yeah, it's a bit it's an kind of ongoing metronome, and mm-hmm. it just kind of, yeah, it's just this kind of like third party, you know, thing that keeps a little bit the whole
mm-hmm.
thing contained, because it could just kind of keeps a rhythm, mm-hmm. keeps a pace,
yeah,
keeps and it's something that I realized is when you're working in you know, because the services can be hired anywhere,
mm-hmm.
so essentially
By anyone. Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, they could happen outside at a public monument, they could happen in domestic space, it could happen in a massive gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I negotiate with the client what is the best way to fulfill this any particular hire.
Yeah.
But what I noticed with the sound is that if if the viewing experience is kind of open, mm-hmm. in the sense that we're just busy with our activity,
yeah.
and you can walk in and walk out. So like the kind of performance procedure is not like laid out and specific. The mm-hmm. space maybe not specifically demarcated. That this little soundtrack mm-hmm. in the way just kind of. It kind of defines the space. It's yeah. like sound as a kind of metronomic spatial divider, and yeah. and it's worked. You mm-hmm. know, I continue to use it for the services.
It's also like a very particular. I mean, it's a metronome, but it's also like a space age metronome, or it somehow yeah. like feels like, you know, like a future metronome or something like that.
Yeah, it's a metronome of vocal samples. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of like a very low bass frequency and like these kind of clipped vocal samples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely reinforced the cool gliding kind right. of gesture, you know, went very well with
good.
It. Well, okay, so can you tell us a little about, you know, the last of the trilogy, mm-hmm. Some Writing, and maybe, you know, how that kind of developed on the other two pieces, mm-hmm. and, you know, what was different about it?
Mm-hmm. So I guess Some Writing culminated in, like, and it may or may not be the last service. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything planned in the future. I think I'm going to take a little break from making the services,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's going to be the last one.
Oh,
I think
okay.
the format will continue,
mm-hmm.
Because it's something that I am learning more and more about, and it's, for my work, just a really generative format for. Mm-hmm. Developing, enacting, and disseminating choreographic work.
Yeah.
But just to go, to go back on Some Writing. So it kind of culminated in this thinking that I mentioned before about language,
mm-hmm.
and its uses and appropriations and exploitations,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
Particularly in cultural production. And so with Some Writing, I was thinking more about the theoretical language that underpins mm-hmm. any work.
Yeah.
This idea of what is the kind of, what is the theoretical or discursive springboard
mm-hmm.
for a work, and how that creates context.
Yeah.
And if that idea of context
mm-hmm.
could not be, like, didn't need to be a press release or a catalog essay
mm-hmm.
or some kind of institutional web-based description of a work,
yeah.
but could actually be inside of the work and enlivened from within the work.
Mm-hmm.
So I commissioned two texts
yeah.
by two different writers, mm-hmm. Sarah Lara Greer, who
yeah.
lives in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and Catherine Damon,
mm-hmm.
who lives in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both, in different ways, involved in writing within the art sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah wrote about the kind of economies of performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really like essay length, like
yeah.
1,000 to 1,250 words.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine wrote about the politics of embodiment,
mm-hmm.
thinking through that choreographically.
Yeah.
So these were like the two kind of theoretical touchstones
mm-hmm.
for all the services.
Yeah.
And I do Some Writing with another performer,
mm-hmm.
Fran Cheverini.
Yeah.
And so Fran learned Catherine's text,
mm-hmm.
and I learned Sarah's text off by heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we use a kind of popping like quality, this kind of like this movement where individual limbs are contracted
mm-hmm.
to kind of punctuate through the body.
Yeah.
And we use this movement to simultaneously punctuate the text
mm-hmm.
which we are reciting.
Yeah.
So the text is being recited as we're activating this popping quality,
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of punctuating each other and riding each other. And that's
yeah.
hence Some Writing.
Yeah, so it's like a pun, some writing.
Exactly.
And
Catherine said this amazing thing when we were developing it. She was like, because both of them, when I spoke to them on Skype, they were like sure that I was calling the work Some Writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to clarify and be like, some writing, yeah. You know?
And you're actually, like, at moments you mime, like, the movement of writing.
Yeah, or I think the way that the popping quality moves through the body, like, mm-hmm. it can go from, let's say, the upper half of the body, mm-hmm. and then it, like, kind of bounces down to the legs. Uh-huh. It kind of looks... in the kind of bounciness of it, and you can see that I'm demonstrating a video yeah. right now in the
studio. Listeners, you can't see this, so, but yeah.
that it kind of looks like a kind of, like a bouncing, almost like a pinballing, mm-hmm. you know? So it has this kind of riding quality. Mm-hmm. And Catherine said this great thing. She's like, oh, some riding. Yeah. Well, that means you can fall off. And I was like, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, that's so great, because if you think of... you know, if you think of the task of, like, trying to, like, the body trying to ride text or text trying to ride the body, mm-hmm. well, you're not always going to be in sync. Yeah. One is going to dominate the mm-hmm. other, or they're going to be streamlined and then kind of bifurcate and, you know, like... Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting comment that she made.
Hmm, interesting. And then, so that you kind of did a test ride,
yeah.
here in LA, as part of the show at China Art Objects that Public Fiction did.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was that show called again? I don't remember, like, but it was it was like an 8-week show yeah. that Lauren Mackler from Public Fiction, mm-hmm. This Sentence it was called.
Yeah.
Had put together, and every week there was a kind of, like, different accumulation of a work, mm-hmm. That would culminate in kind of the whole group show by the end. Yeah. So we were actually the last week.
Yeah.
And we did a 1-hour hire of mm-hmm. some writing.
Yeah. And then afterwards you took that to London and performed it at the ICA.
Yeah.
So all of these pieces in some way, I mean, at least in the most recent iterations, have been done within the, you know, within the spaces of art as yeah. opposed to spaces of dance, per se.
Yes.
How has the reception been for that? Like, have you felt like a different kind of, you know, vibe coming from, art spectators as opposed to...
Sure. I mean, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to develop the services was that my work was being, my stage works were being invited to be shown mm-hmm. in visual art contexts.
Yeah.
But they're not theaters. Mm-hmm. And the social contract of the exhibition,
yeah.
the kind of liberal, mm-hmm. Independent way that a viewer walks around an exhibition is very different to the social contract of viewing a work in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I had real problems, like, transposing these stage works into visual art
mm-hmm.
Environments or contexts.
Yeah.
They didn't fit. These works didn't fit. So mm-hmm. the services was a way of dealing with that. And also thinking through, you know, of course there's the precedence of the service in, you know, different conceptual art practices, the way this contractual exchange
mm-hmm.
or, you know, this idea that it, you know, the it starts from a kind of very decisive, written contractual form and then bleeds out to an action that's fulfilled
mm-hmm.
or, you know, with some cleaning the materialist kind of feminist precedence of, like, someone like Lademan Ukeles or,
yeah.
you know, so it was a way of me somehow not just having choreography adopted,
mm-hmm.
like me kind of putting forward my agenda in not just letting choreography be adopted
yeah.
when I work in a visual arts.
So kind of to, like...
But actively saying, well, how could choreography fit into some of these threads that have already been...
Yeah.
That are already at play within the history of visual arts.
Yeah, to engage with that kind of...
Totally. And not just kind of come in naively,
mm-hmm.
not to come in and just, like, leverage off
yeah.
the novelty of dance being
mm-hmm.
in the gallery or the exhibition format,
yeah.
but to actively say, well, why does this need to be here?
Yeah.
And what's at stake here?
And to use that as occasion for that kind of, to think, for that rethinking or kind of
totally.
You know, interrogation.
Totally.
That's interesting.
But,
huh.
It's interesting because, you know, there's all this talk about interdisciplinary and cross-medium, but, you know, the contexts are still very different.
Yeah.
And I have to say that given that you know, I've been making the services for 3 years, mm-hmm. and they're totally available for a theater to hire them, whether it be, maybe they're not going to hire a service, doesn't make sense to hire a service and present it in a scheduled event format, mm-hmm. but they could hire a service and have it somewhere else in the theater or in another way.
Yeah.
But the services have never been hired by a theater, and so that makes me think, well, the kind of framework of thinking and that the services deal with mm-hmm. Just may not be on the radar of theater programmers, or, you know, like the format of the 1 hour you know, show is such a strong format that, you know, the theater is not open to it. I have a potential hire mm-hmm. for next year.
Yeah.
It's not confirmed that would happen in a theater context.
Oh, really?
So I have to put that in.
Yeah, so
in
that
Germany.
Yeah, and that would be really interesting because, I mean, you know, in an art context, people don't generally buy tickets per se. I mean, I guess for Step and Repeat, there were tickets that were sold.
Right.
But it wasn't just to see you, it was kind of to enter the entire space.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden it becomes, oh, well, people are buying tickets specifically to come to see you or to see the piece, you know, whichever one that you would do, then it kind of, changes the dynamics of it, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And I haven't yet gone down that road of speaking about that. I presume in the theater, in this proposed theater scenario, that I would be servicing in the foyer, mm-hmm. and it may be of an evening where there are several other shows happening.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And it may not be in and of itself a ticketed mm-hmm. thing. But, you know, as I said before, it'll be great to take the service mm-hmm. back to the theater because it highlights also the economy of the theater.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ultimately, you know, the service model is derivative.
Yeah.
From theater tradition.
Yeah.
You pay your ticket, mm-hmm. you get the value of your ticket within the kind of finite experience of the show, mm-hmm. and you leave with having the kind of like, you know, the value of the ephemeral experience.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it is an exchange or a transaction of effective or performed mm-hmm. content.
Yeah.
So it, you know, the services are that, you know.
Yeah.
So that's exciting for me to take it into the theater.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so we only have a few minutes left, actually.
Oh, really?
But I was wondering if maybe we can transition from, you know, some writing to some rhyming and talk a little about, you know, you really did have a whirlwind schedule this summer because you were literally, you came back like from the ICA, right? And then and then within like a couple of days, immediately had to do the performance at the All the Instruments Agree, which was a 2-day festival exhibition.
Yeah.
I'm careful to specify that it was an exhibition.
But I think the byline was, is it a concert or is it an exhibition?
Yeah.
Like, is it a plane? Is it a bird?
Is it Superman? But it was, whatever it was really fantastic to see all the talent that was there.
Yeah.
Many of them artists who were doing concerts, you know, when people don't necessarily even associate visual artists, you know, as you know, with music, right?
Right.
And you were there doing some, I think you call it rhyming, is that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, no, definitely, there's, we did a kind of, I performed with my friend Adam Gunter, who's mm-hmm. a music producer under the name Zhang.
Yeah.
And we decided to do a kind of medley of music that I've made just independently, and then little kind of musical interludes that have been in my works for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And some of, I think there were 2 or 3 tracks that I made for this EP that Adam and I produced mm-hmm. last year.
Yeah. And were you a little hesitant about appearing on stage as like a rapper as opposed to a dancer? Was that kind of new territory for you? Or like, oh, what am I gonna?
I think I think that there's been like kind of rapping and rhyme material in my work for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So it's like not, it's something that's been evolving. And and as I said, like I made this EP last year, Feed Your Daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would, you know, I don't think I would ever call myself anything other than a choreographer. Like, like dance and choreography are the disciplines that I know. They're the disciplines that, you know, it would be like lying and saying that I wasn't born in the place that I was born, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, but I do believe that I can still be a choreographer and engage with it, you know, like very kind of studiously and willfully engage with a form like rapping and and bring something to that and learn something from it. I think the rapping, particularly why it's interesting to me, is that it's like the nature of wordplay, the nature of language made expressive, just seems is such a interesting and effective and kind of like galvanizing form for like moving beyond the rigidity of language.
Okay, interesting. Well, maybe as a way of closing the show, we can listen to a little excerpt from Feed Your Daughters.
Totally.
Is there a particular track that you are fond of, or?
Yeah, I think there's a track called Swoop that's quite fun.
Okay, so
if you've got, do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, I have it here, and I think we'll close out with that. But before we do, I want to thank you so much, Adam Linder, for joining us on Performance Now.
Thanks for having me, John.
It's been great. And for our listeners, do you have any upcoming projects that people will be able to, you know, see you in or keep an eye out for?
Yeah, I will have a new show in LA next summer. Let me just say that. It's like watch this space. I'm gonna embark on making a new work in the first kind of half of next year with actually a really great performer who I'm gonna plug right now, Jenny Mary Tai Lu, who lives in LA, and another performer, Stephen Thompson, who lives in Paris, and they're coming to LA to work with me. And that will have its premiere in LA next summer.
Wow, great. Okay, so we can anticipate that. We'll have to be patient for a few months. But in the meantime, here is Swoop from the EP Feed Your Daughters, featuring Adam and Zhang. Okay.
Great.
Thanks, John. Thanks.
Desires. Kids are gonna be alright. Twinkle him is on my nose. So swole. Like birds, do with eyes. Take me out the blood, my spooky pleasures. Flush, flush, puppy when you're sending me them silent letters. On the crew, got the who's who on the new order boot. It's for ornamental proof. Telly Swoop. Side, DM me with the hieroglyphic title, the frequency time, the majority. turn the ratio right. When the bodies is on some photo disco silences, they be sipping on spoken alliances, and I'm gone. We out the swoop. Drippity. Rock a room electrically, bodies pressed next to me, roulette with destiny, 2 to 1 parenthetically, and for the hell of it, ask me how this moment can be relevant, I'm missing your mind, telepathic benefits, let me swoon. Serenade hands, no clean it up with the buffalo stands. No shoving some doubts with shout outs. The fallout in small hours, cause you forgot just to breathe in and breathe out. This is not about the horse. I'm exercising on blinkered choice. Won't be serving no matter if I recall. Second course felt our temperature changing. Crossed the there on the porch with a whole workforce of remorse. Eyes pouring was a gale of force.